difficulties, any problems with the other people that she was working with. After all, she was a foreigner in a strange land. Repeatedly in these verses that we've read together, though she's been called the daughter-in-law of Naomi, and though Naomi's been referred to her as by the writer as her mother-in-law, we also read that she is Ruth the Moabitess. Ruth the Moabitess. She's still a foreigner. She's recognized as being related to Naomi, but she's not yet become part of the community there in Bethlehem. Was she safe being a foreign girl in this strange country? Would she be treated properly? And how was she coping with all her labor, with this great back-breaking work of gleaning? Was she getting on okay with that? Perhaps she was unused to that kind of work, and this would be a big thing for her to be out there from dawn until dusk, working hard in this manual way. Was she coping okay? Perhaps another question running through Naomi's mind was, well, when is she going to be home? When will my curiosity be satisfied? When will my fears be laid to rest? When will I see her walking in through the door and be able to rest assured that yes, she is safe, and yes, she has been able to cope, and no one has mistreated her this day? And of course, will she be successful? She's gone out to work hard to bring in a small amount of barley in the hope of providing sufficient food to keep them alive from day to day. Well, those of you who are parents will recognize and understand the kind of questions and worries that would have been going through Naomi's mind on this first day that Ruth has gone out to the fields to glean. You'll appreciate as well the relief with which she will have seen Ruth walking up the road and coming in through the front door of the house. And you will perhaps understand a little of Naomi's excitement at seeing her again, and seeing her obviously successful. Here she was, and we're told quite specifically that at the end of her day, she had been able to glean about an ephah of barley. Exactly how much that was ranges from a bucket full to a number of barrels full. Well, obviously, it's not a number of barrels full that Ruth carried home at the end of that day. But it was a considerable amount. The words in the Hebrew, when it says there in verse 18, then she took it up and went into the city, carries the idea of effort. She loaded it up. She put it in her head shawl that was used for carrying goods, and loaded it up onto her head, this great bundle that she had been able to glean. And as soon as she walks into the door, Naomi has some questions for her. Naomi sees Ruth coming in with this great bundle, and she's excited. And in her excitement at seeing Ruth and seeing her so obviously successful, she asks two questions, very similar questions. Well, she's excited. Where have you gleaned today, and where did you work? She's overcome with the success that Ruth has had. She doesn't really think to ask questions that aren't repetitive. And she doesn't give Ruth any time to answer either. Out she bursts with some words of praise. Where did you work? Where did you glean today? Blessed be the one who took notice of you. Ruth hasn't answered her yet. And yet she's blessing the person who owned these fields and who obviously had taken notice of Ruth. Ruth herself was amazed that this person should take notice of her. In verse 10, we read that she fell on her face and bowed down to the ground and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your eyes?" And she uses the same words, that you should take notice of me. Oh, someone had taken notice of her. She knew it. And Naomi saw it. There she was with this ephah of barley. More than could reasonably have been expected. Much more. No one who had just gone out into the field to glean would come home with an ephah of barley unless someone had noticed her and helped her and blessed her. But Naomi, while she was excited about this, was even more excited a few moments later when eventually Ruth did manage to get a word in edgeways and answer those questions. One word stands out as provoking Naomi to even greater wonder and praise than she had before. One word, in fact, one name, the name Boaz. The man's name with whom I work today is Boaz, said Ruth. And that provoked Naomi to praise and to bless the Lord and to bless this person. Blessed be he of the Lord who has not forsaken his kindness to the living and the dead. That Ruth must have looked somewhat baffled by Naomi's response. Why should she be so excited? She'd been out to glean and she'd been very successful. That was something to be excited about. But why be so excited that the field belonged to a man called Boaz? Could have belonged to anyone with any name. Why get all excited about the name Boaz? So Naomi offers an explanation. Well, Boaz is a relation of ours. Oh, okay, thinks Ruth. Well, that's good. But so what? So I happen to work in a field that belonged to a relation. He's not just any relation, Naomi goes on to say. He's one of our close relatives. Or more properly, he is a kinsman redeemer. He's a special kind of relative. He's a relative who has certain legal rights and obligations. And that's why Naomi became so excited. Excited, yes, that she had been successful. She had enough barley there, not just to make one loaf of bread to feed them that evening, but to make bread for a week or more. She'd been successful. But Naomi saw that God had been at work and that he had ordered events. And by this providence of God, Ruth had ended up working in the field of a relative, and not just any relative, but a close relative. A kinsman redeemer. Naomi got excited because of the name Boaz. She knew that her life and Ruth's life could be completely transformed. She knew that this meant that there was a possibility that Ruth would not have to go out and glean in the fields, that they would not have to scrape the bottom of the barrel to get by from day to day. That they would no longer have to live in poverty, alienated from their own possessions, which Naomi had had to sell because of their poverty, and just to get by, just to make ends meet. Things could be different for them now, because here was Boaz. Let me ask this question. How could their lives be transformed? What was it that Naomi knew that Ruth didn't know that made her so excited? Well, we can sum it up in one word, and it's the word redemption. It's a word that we've read a number of times this morning in the book of Leviticus, in that 25th chapter that Jason read to us. A chapter all about redemption, redeeming what has been lost, what has been sold due to poverty. Redemption, to redeem, it simply means to buy back. But redemption presupposes some awful calamity. Something has happened that has forced the people who first owned the property to sell it. They've become poor. They've become destitute. They've lost all that they've had. They've had to sell even what they owned, even what belonged to them, just to get by. And as we saw in that reading, that sometimes they even had to sell themselves. Ruth and Naomi hadn't had to do that yet. But you can understand, can't you, if you imagine the situation and you understand the great poverty that these women were in. For the next 7 weeks, they were reasonably okay. There was the harvest season, first the barley harvest and then the wheat harvest. It lasted about 7 weeks. But what then? What after that? Would Ruth have to sell herself into slavery? Would this be their end? And for Ruth, it wasn't the same as for an Israelite. Her slavery would be perpetual. At least an Israelite could look forward to the year of Jubilee, when they would be released, when they would be set free. No wonder Naomi was getting excited. Here was someone who could change this bleak outlook. Here was the possibility that they could go on beyond the 7 weeks of the harvests and into the future with confidence that Ruth would not have to sell herself into slavery and they would be provided for. And more than all that even, that all that they have sold would be bought back. You see, the kinsman redeemer, this close relative of the poor who had sold their possessions, had a right to buy it back. He could walk up to the new owner of the farm and say to that owner, "I want to buy the farm back. Here's the money." And the new owner couldn't say no. It was a legal right under God's law. A kinsman redeemer could come and buy it back. Even the price was set. How much was paid for this property? How many years are left until the year of Jubilee? And the price that the redeemer had to pay was a proportion of what was initially paid for the property, according to the number of years that were left. If the property was bought when it was 40 years until the Jubilee, and the Redeemer came along when it was 30 years until the Jubilee, he would pay 3/4 of the price that the property was bought for, a proportion of it. It was all very fair. And this was what God had decreed would be done for those who, through poverty, had to sell the possession that they had. How did they have the possession? Because God had given it to Israel. And through poverty, they'd lost it. So what? Some of you may be asking. That's all very interesting, and it certainly helps us to understand why Naomi was getting all excited. But as you realise, I hope you realise that this book of Ruth tells us more than simply this story, this love story, this wonderful, happy story of those who were in dire straits being helped out and being made to prosper. It has something that means something to us today. It's full of pictures. And of course, we're talking about redemption. We're talking about a redeemer. We're talking about what salvation is all about, what Christianity is all about. And of course, for us, similarly as with Ruth and Naomi, the fact that we need to be redeemed means that something has happened. Something has been lost. We've dealt with it before in looking at other portions of this book. This whole fact that we have fallen into sin. That we have fallen out of our initial state of perfection. Okay, none of us in this room this morning has ever been in a state of perfection, unfortunately. In sin we were conceived. We have inherited the sinful nature of our first parents, Adam and Eve. But our first parents were perfect initially. And that's what we've lost. We've lost this ability to be able to walk with the Lord in his presence. We've been banished from his presence as Adam and Eve literally were banished from that garden because God cannot dwell where sin is. He cannot look upon it. He is holy. He cannot condone it. And so those who are sinners are banished from him in the sense that they are not blessed by him. They do not have access to his love and all that means to those who are his family and who are his children. We've lost all of that by our sin. If Ruth and Naomi's situation can be described as a dreadful calamity, I don't know what words to use to describe our situation. And as I was thinking about this at the beginning of the service, and considering it and wondering, well, how can we really appreciate our situation? So as I look out upon you Sunday by Sunday, and as I consider my own life, we don't fully appreciate the situation we're in, do we? We don't really understand the degree that we have fallen from God. All have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God, we're told in Romans 3:23. But what does it actually mean to us? Do we realise just how dreadful our condition is? Especially we who live in this Western society. We're so comfortable, aren't we? We live lives of ease most of the time. Oh yes, we have our problems and we have our difficulties. We have our concerns and our worries. But let's face it, for most of us here in this room this morning, for most of our lives, we've been comfortable. We haven't been the richest. We haven't had all the luxuries that this world has to offer. But neither have we had real cause to grumble and to complain. We can't really say that life has treated us unfairly. And so when we hear about a redeemer, we can ask, well, what do I need to be redeemed from? What's the problem? What have I lost? It's obvious that Naomi and Ruth had lost everything. They were paupers. Yes, they wanted their land to be redeemed. But I'm fine. I'm okay. I have a roof over my head. I have food in the fridge. I have clothes in my wardrobe. I have a job to go out to. My future looks reasonably okay. But the redemption that the Bible speaks about, the redemption that we need, has nothing to do with what we possess in terms of material things. Food and clothing, a home to live in, friends and family. It has nothing to do with any of that. It has everything to do with our relationship with God. The God who made us to be a pleasure to him and that he could be a pleasure to us. That we should serve him and that we should enjoy him. And we've lost that. And now we have a God, and we all have the same God, whether you acknowledge it or not. We have a God who's our enemy, rather than a God who's our friend. We have a God who, with whom we're at war, rather than one with whom we're at peace. And when you look at the pictures that we see on our televisions of various places in Eastern Europe or in Africa, where there is warfare, where there is suffering as a result of this warfare. And as you look at that and try and take those pictures and interpret them in the context of human beings being at war with God, and when you look at those pictures of such suffering, and when you look at the conflict that's going on, then that's where we're at. We're enemies of God. We've lost the peace that we once enjoyed. You look at those farmers in Zimbabwe, is it? Look at the suffering that they're going through. Their farms being taken from them, sometimes at the loss of their own lives. A few years ago, a few months ago, there was peace. It's all shattered. It's all gone. Oh, what would they do to have that peace restored? To know the freedom to live in their own homes in safety once again. We've lost that. We've lost the freedom to live our lives in safety, because at the end of our lives we know that we will die. And that's the result of sin. And that's why we need to be redeemed. We need to have our lives given back to us. Lives of comfort, lives of freedom, lives of satisfaction, lives that are at peace with God rather than at enmity with God. Lives that are no longer fighting a warfare that we're guaranteed to lose. And instead, lives that are at a peace that is stronger and more lasting than anything that we know of. We need to be redeemed. This is the transformation that can take place, just as there could be this transformation in the lives of Ruth and Naomi. Another question we may ask is, well, why could Boaz make such a difference? And again, it can be summed up in one word. He was a kinsman redeemer. Kinsman simply means relative. We all have kinsmen. My brothers are kinsmen to me. My parents. My nieces. Some are nearer of kin to me than others. My cousins aren't such close relatives as my brothers. But they're all kin, kinsmen. And Boaz was kin. He was a kinsman. He was a relative of Naomi. And he was a redeemer. He stood in a position as a relative, and not all relatives, it seems, stood in this position, but he was one who had the rights of redemption, which also carried obligations as well. Why could Boaz make such a difference? Because he was a relative who had the right to go up to the new owner of Naomi's property and say, "I want it back. Here's the money." But Boaz could make such a difference not only because he was a kinsman redeemer, but because he was wealthy as well. We were told earlier on There was a relative of Naomi's husband, a man of great wealth of the family of Elimelech. His name was Boaz, a man of great wealth. Naomi heard this name, Boaz. Two things rang in her mind. Boaz, he's a relative. He's a kinsman redeemer. And Boaz, he's wealthy. No good having a kinsman redeemer who was also poor. No help at all. Had all the rights, but no ability. Boaz was a kinsman redeemer who, if he wished, was able to redeem them. He was wealthy. He could buy back this land, this property that Naomi had sold. And the amazing thing is that God has provided for those of us who have become enemies of His. God has provided a kinsman redeemer for us. And that person is Jesus Christ, God's own Son. It's an amazing thing, these parallels between the laws of the Old Testament and the way that we see God working out in His covenant of grace. It's amazing to see God's provision of this law of redemption by a kinsman redeemer in the Old Testament, and see how it was designed as a hint of what He was going to do for those people He chose to save. He provided them with a kinsman redeemer, with someone who was able to perform those obligations and rights that He had already provided in His law for His chosen people Israel. You see, Jesus Christ, though He may not seem a particularly close relative of yours or mine, is a relative. He's the Son of God, and yet He became God incarnate, God in the flesh. In other words, He became a relative of the whole human race. He became one of us. There's a popular song going around, asks the question, what if God was one of us? I haven't listened to the whole song particularly closely. I don't know whether it goes on to explain what if God was one of us. But every time I hear that one line as it's played over the radio all night when I'm working at Countdown, I always think, well, God is one of us. That's the amazing thing. God became one of us in Jesus Christ. And what if God was one of us? We could be redeemed. We could be redeemed by one who not only has a right to redeem by virtue of His relationship to us as a member of the human race, but also because He is so wealthy. Jason made mention earlier that God owns the cattle on 1,000 hills. Well, He owns the hills as well. Owns the whole world. Owns the whole universe. They're His creation. They belong to Him. But the wealth that can redeem us, it's not that kind of wealth. Jesus could sell the whole of the universe and not be able to redeem us with the money He'd get for it. The wealth that Jesus had was a moral wealth and a spiritual wealth. You see, we have sold ourselves into slavery to sin, and we need to be bought back. We've become enemies of God, and we need to be reconciled to Him. But the price of that reconciliation, the price of redeeming us, the need that we have to be bought back, involves moral perfection and spiritual life. We lost all of that. We are morally imperfect, and we are spiritually dead. But Jesus Christ was perfect, absolutely perfect. Not a spot not a wrinkle, not a stain. Nothing mars Christ's perfection. And quite clearly he is very much spiritually alive. His is life. He is life. He is the one who gives life to all. And it's Jesus Christ then who is able to redeem we who are dead, we who are imperfect, by using his perfection and using his life to buy ours back. And through him then, we receive perfection. We receive righteousness. The Bible talks about us being clothed with Christ's righteousness. You realize, don't you, that there is never a time that we can stand before God without being clothed with Christ's righteousness. Our own sins being forgiven, we must still go to God in Christ's righteousness. Every day of our lives, it is Christ that we look to. We can never say, Christ saved me, Christ gave his life for me, and now I'm doing okay. It's always Christ. Day after day after day, we must keep trusting Christ. How is it that I can have confidence for the future? Because of Christ. Because Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And I never trust in my own righteousness. I always trust in Christ's righteousness, which is always trustworthy. So we can have confidence. It's Christ who gave himself for us, that we may be freed from sin, that we may be brought near to God once more. Well, quickly in closing, Naomi got all excited. She was excited because she saw in Boaz a redeemer, someone who could buy back their property, who could set them once again on their feet in the community, who could give them back all that they had lost. It made her excited. But she said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, verse 22, "It is good, my daughter, that you go out with his young women and that people do not meet you in any other field or encounter you in any other place," or even, as it could be translated, so that people do not abuse you. That you go there with his people where he's offered you protection already. That you don't go elsewhere where you may not have that safety, where you may not have that protection. You go and you do as he says. Stay near to his people in his fields. Show your gratitude towards him. Ruth needs to show respect and honour to Boaz by doing what he's asked. By doing it, she indicates her loyalty to him, to her kinsman. She indicates her gratitude for all he's done, all he is doing, and all he is able to do for them. And of course, for those of us who recognize what Jesus Christ has done in giving himself for us, then for we, there is a need to stay close to him, to walk with him, to work with him, to be found among his people, to show our gratitude for all that he has done for us by obeying him, by doing as he has asked us to do, by living according to his ways. We need to indicate our loyalty to him. He has done so much for us. He promises to do so much more for us. Many of us here are eagerly awaiting the redemption of our bodies. We know that God in Christ has saved us, but all the fullness of that is not yet realized. We look forward to that, but while we're looking forward to it, we don't go off and do other things. We don't go and be found in other places. What does this mean? Well, it means that our lives need to be consistently reflecting the fact that we belong to God, that we're His people. We don't be found where those who love Jesus Christ oughtn't to be found. We don't dwell in the company of those who hate God and who ridicule His laws and His ways. We show our loyalty. We carry our flag. We wear the right rugby top. We show who we have made our allegiance with. And we do it day in, day out, every day, just as Naomi told Ruth to do. Go out to the field each day. Go and glean each day. But go to Boaz's field. Work among his people. Naomi was excited because she saw in Boaz the end of all their problems. We should be excited. We who have Jesus Christ as our kinsman redeemer. We should be excited by the fact that we are freed from all the problems that sin has brought into our lives. And though we may still for a time have to bear with the consequences of that, there is coming a time when we will be completely freed, when we will be married to the Son of God, when we will be taken to His home, when we will be living in comfort and at peace forever. Let's show our excitement concerning these things. Let's show that we belong to God. Let's speak of it to one another and to others also. Let's tell them that they too can enjoy the great riches of belonging to this kinsman redeemer, if they will recognize their poverty and go and ask Him to buy them back. May God help us all for His glory. Amen.